Good evening, everyone. First of all, it's a great honor and a privilege to have present here tonight Nabhagun, Shishiva, Sister Vedas, or Isodas. I'm sure that you will give us much food for thought tonight. Many of us have questions such as, how are the halacha fairly distributed? How are Yerusha? For instance, one has a son, has daughters. The halacha of the son is the Yerush. And we would like to know, for instance, how do we do this of the halacha to distribute equally the way we would like to? And such many questions that I felt we will take from the audience. We also have the pleasure and the honor of having Ms. Judith Grimaldi here, a well-known attorney who will address the same issues and cover much ground in her statement. But first I'll open up and ask Rabbi Reuven Becker from North Human to address us and to open up the floor. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Reuven Becker and welcome to the second of a three-part series on caring for our elders, a free community service sponsored by the Torah Avot. As I mentioned last week, I consider it a privilege to be associated with Mr. Sharp and his fine facility. An indication of the quality of his leadership are the staff he recruited. It's always an inspiration to watch Alan McGill as he lightens up the room. All staff, including everyone who helped set up this event, deserve a round of applause. Last week, we had the benefit of a most eloquent and, if I might say, candid presentation from Rabbi Yaakov Pollack on Kibbutz Av Ha'Em, challenges and opportunities of fulfilling the mitzvah while caring for another parent. His message included a very noteworthy observation, that fulfilling the mitzvah is more challenging today than in any previous generation due to the changes in the family structure. Nonetheless, it is our obligation to fulfill the mitzvah. There's no requirement to love a parent. The mitzvah is to give cover to the parents. This full discussion is available at the sign-in desk. We have tapes from our colleagues. We also have tapes from other Rabbanim, previous Lord of Yomim seminars on today's topic. Rabbi Mordechai Willig, Rabbi Yonah Reese, Rabbi Herschel Welcher, also available. To put today's shiur into perspective, it's appropriate, I would imagine, to consider the following concern, and that is, doesn't it seem perhaps a bit self-serving for a child or for us to be talking about the concerns of caring for our elders and at the same time raise the issues of estate planning? They seem like totally inconsistent and conflicting discussions. In fact, this was somewhat troubling for me in preparing a book that I'm writing on end-of-life care and Kibbutz Av Ha'Em, and I've researched the matter. And what seems to me to be the correct approach is the following. We are, in fact, encouraged to assist anyone who is at end of life to perform vidui. And this, too, is somewhat uncomfortable. Who are we to be in a position to suggest to an elder statesman, to a person, to say vidui? But the halacha clarifies this for us. Specifically, as is brought down in the Geshe'a Chaim, it is, in fact, an act of chesed to facilitate and assist someone in setting his affairs in order, to facilitate the preparation of a will, that a burial plot has been selected, finances are in order, and obligations have been attended to. A second point of significance in introducing the value and importance of tonight's discussion is another halacha, perhaps not that familiar or known, or put into the context of Kibbutz Av Ha'Em. But when children fight among themselves, it causes tsar, anguish to a parent. It's equally true when parents are alive as when they are no longer living. The result is a breach in Kibbut Arba Eim. Moreover, a tsava, a will, if designed without sensitivity to the children, can literally tear a family apart. So it behooves both the parents and the children to carefully listen to tonight's hadracha. It indeed is very strongly connected with Kiyum of Mitzvot Kibbut Arba Eim. We have the honor and privilege to benefit this evening to learn from a Gadol, one of the most respected poskim today, someone who really needs no introduction, Rosh Yeshiva and Oscar, an advocate for the community and community needs, Rabbi Yisrael Belsky. We know how busy and active he is, yet he has taken the time to address us today because he joins us in the feeling that the topic ought to be given appropriate attention. There'll be questions and answers after his presentation, so if you have any concerns, please write them down, and we will be happy to address them from the floor after the shiur. Hagon HaRav Yisrael Belsky.
So I probably will find my address inadequate. And the only people who really could give over full treatment of this subject are those who've had many experiences resolving all disputes that crop up because of inadequate preparation and improper tzavuos. I'll try my best. The time comes in every individual's life and every family life, and they have to sort of give instructions for what to do with their property and what to do sometimes morally and ethically, not just how to distribute the funds after the person passes on. It's very often such a troubling prospect that people keep putting it off and off until the time when they're no longer capable of really treating the distribution of their property intelligently. So the idea of preparing a savor is something that must be stressed from the very beginning. There are savors which are beautifully written and very, very helpful, both in distributing the property of the individual and inspiring and advising the family after their passing, that were written 40 years before the person's death. Some of these are famous. Some of these are learned and read, as I am said, from very great individuals. They're not necessarily written when the person sees, because of health reasons and other reasons, his body deteriorating, and he sees that his passing is imminent, and that's the reason he began to write. Just the opposite. When he was full control of his body and senses, that's when he's able to give very special thought, instructing children and trying to distribute his assets rationally and equitably. That's one thing. Another general remark that I'd like to make is that it was mentioned earlier that a tavor should be made in order to avoid arguments after the person's passing. And it's understood that many people have exactly the opposite kavana. They write something to show their disapproval of a certain child and to punish one over the other. And the purpose of their writing tavors, and I'm a yid, writing and rewriting and rewriting, is just to make the most trouble that they can. And sometimes it seems to me that when a person reaches the point in his life when he has no ability to experience any pleasure, the only remaining pleasure is to write tavors and make changes and to cause all kinds of dissension and harm. This is something that Rabbonim, who advise the individuals closely, should try to get them to avoid and to kick away from it, and to impress upon them that after a while, when nothing remains of himself but his memory, it's important to see to it that his memory is a beloved one. Whenever I say his, I mean hers as well. I'm just the makasser over here. And Moshe Kodesh, the word, the male verbal form, is used for male and female simultaneously. Chazal say that a person, Al Tehi Ba'aburi Achanta, it's instructions to a rogue. It's interesting. One of the few times in Chazal where the Rov is the one who's advised not the individual. The Rov is told, Al Tehi Ba'aburi Achanta. If you have a person who got angry at one of his children and decided to disinherit him, so you don't take part in making up a will for the individual that should disinherit any one of his children. Speak to him and advise him and tell him what a terrible thing it will be and what hatred it will cause. His memory, instead of being beloved, will be something that of one person, even the one who received it all, won't think of him as being someone who they admire, but rather someone who they manage to steal away everything they got as a victim, rather than as a noble person. That's the way it is, Rabbi Sayyid. The robber of the bank doesn't look at the bank as with admiration. He looks at the bank as a victim of his, and has absolutely no feeling of love for the bank. So when a person manages to walk away with all of the property of the parent and get the others to lose everything, there's nothing in this savor of the parent that will make the parent beloved even by the child who got injured. Sometimes it's very difficult, but the rov who advises an individual should take pains to be strong about this point. Make sure to tell him that what he leaves over in his life should be fair, should be respectful, should be something that every one of the children, and if necessary, other relatives, should be dealt with fairly. There's another thing to mention right over here. You know, there was one person's passing in Shas, which is treated at greater length than anyone else, and that's the passing of Rabbeinu HaKodesh Rebbe Yehuda Anossi, the teacher of all of Klal Yisroel. Mora says that he called his children and gave them instructions. A number of things are very important to repeat, but they have nothing to do with the Inyan of Sapur. But one thing he says is, Yizohiru b'chvoid imchem. Rebbe had married a second time. His wife was not the mother of his children. And yet, he told his children, treat her as you would treat your mother, honor her, make sure that she's well taken care of. It's something for people to remember. I've seen time and time again, and I told you before I have very little experience, but enough that I've seen certain things a few times. I've seen how this wealthy person leaves over property, and every effort is made by the children of his first wife to take literally the second wife and dump her out onto the street, and to take away her apartment, to take away everything. There were times when a woman came crying to me, look at what they're trying to do to me. And I've had to call them and beg them, literally, to try to leave her alone. And sometimes it's almost impossible to get people who are all worked up and psyched up to just stop doing the thing that they do. So it should be carefully provided for. And not just for a woman who's not the mother of the children, but even the mother. People see the property that's left over as something that is going to make them rich. They can't wait for the day that the parents will pass on. And they don't use such fine language either. See, an elderly parent should try to do what he can and take advice in learning how to do it. To see to it that the relation between him and his children isn't a battle-like relation. How many times have I been in a nursing home and seen an elderly woman or elderly gentleman who's always surrounded by children and grandchildren, and they're all going out of the way to do something, to read to him, to sing with him and her, and to make them as happy as possible. And bed after bed of others who have children and who have relatives, and was laying there as lonely as you could imagine. And I came to the nursing home with my younger children years ago to visit someone who had boarded by us, rented a room, and he became old and could no longer take care of himself, and worked together with JASA to try to get him into a nursing home, and finally he got him settled in Menorah on Bushwick Avenue. And by every Friday I would take my little children, all of them, for about 2 years maybe, to visit him. They played, they sang, but they did much more than that. They went from room to room, doing what they could to cheer up the people in the other rooms as well, and how they appreciated it. And they, many of them, had children like that who never ever came to look at them. It's pitiful when a family disintegrates because the only thing that the children can do is to hope for someday dividing up the spoils. When we speak about setting the terms for division of one's property, it should be pointed to very strictly that someone should have the wisdom to create a relationship or strengthen a relationship between the children and the elderly parent, whether they live in a nursing home or whether they live in their own apartment, even if they're self-caring, they still should be able to enjoy the company of their children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, if it were so. And to know that they have something in this world which is eternal Yerusha, more important than anything else. And even in the case where people are childless, there are plenty of people who are able to give them the delight of knowing that their words mean something and their presence in this world is admired and appreciated. And these are things that are worth more than all the money in the world. When this person finally died, he called up his nephew, who never had came to visit. And his nephew thanked us and said, sorry for never calling to thank us before, but we had to call him to give over whatever remained in his hands because of the halachas was his. Now, it was mentioned in the introduction that there is a Torah system for dividing up one's property. And in case there are no instructions, then the Torah system should be adhered to unless everyone agrees to some other division. What is the system of the Torah? The system is the following. The sons inherit the money. The eldest son, if he's a bechor, and many times the eldest son is not a bechor, because the first one was a girl, or it was a child born who didn't survive before him. Well, perhaps there was another marriage, and there may have been a child, he's a Bechor, even though he died, and still in all, the eldest son, in that case, is not a Bechor. The Bechor gets Pishnayim. What does the word Pishnayim mean? It means that he gets double share. So that if they have five sons, then there are six shares. The Bechor gets two, and the others get one apiece, and then you add them up, and that's the total amount of property. The wife is entitled to a number of things. First, she's entitled to live in the apartment and the house that she's been living till now. And if it takes money to keep the house in repair, to pay the taxes, and to keep paying the rent, it's the children who have to pay at least the property that the father left over. Not their own property, although they should be doing so. But their mechuyev to take a part of the Yerusha property and give the woman a dira. That's dira salmona. And she should live there. The kovod, at least as honorable as she had lived during the time of the life with her husband. There are also certain rights that she has to be supported, mezonos, and mezonos includes refuah she'ein mo kitzvot. Refuah she'ein mo kitzvot means medical care which has to go on. It's not a single treatment, but a treatment that may last forever, for a lifetime, or for years. Refuah she'ein mo kitzvot is something that's considered to be mezonos, which is support of the parent. The mother gets her refuah she'ein mo kitzvah from the nechasim that the father left over. Something to remember and to take good care of in writing out a will to see to it that these expenses are covered. If the mother so desires to get married, she's still young, she wants to get married again, even if she's old, that case, she'll move out of the apartment and move into the apartment and help her new husband, presumably. It's not always the case. But once she gets married, she loses these benefits, but then she has the right to claim exubit. Exubit, the way we have it written out today, is a very small amount of money, 200 zuzim, which could amount to a certain volume and weight of silver, which in today's values don't mean much. And attached to that is the medulia and the toisus tzuvit. Together there's 200 bars of silver. No one's clear exactly as to the weight of each bar of pure silver. And there are different opinions as to what the amount is. But let me tell you something. Basically, Mosayim Zuz is enough money, as it was when the halachas of Ksuba were created in Parm the Chachorim, when these numbers were set fast and hard. The Mosayim Zuz of the Ksuba is enough money to support a person for 1 year, and according to one opinion by the Rash, Masechta Peya, enough money to support an individual for 2 years. But at least enough for 1 year. And it's quite a bit of money. The Mosayim Zukukim Kesef Torah is many times more than that. The Mosayim Zukukim Kesef Torah, 200 bars of pure silver. The equivalent to the value of the property that the woman brought in at the time of marriage. Now let's think of a marriage of two young people. The amount that she brought in means that her family and friends take her. Whatever she brought in, be they abuha, not what she herself owned. And that includes the furniture and the dishes and pots and pans, so everything. Everything that exists to outfit a marital home, which is quite a large amount of money. I would put it somewhere at $50,000 or so. In addition to that, the amount is doubled by what the husband voluntarily added to the required amount of tzuvah. Every tzuvah stresses that. Sovi, he agreed and voluntarily added toisaklon and delay, matching amount of money which is equal to the medunia that she brought. It's something that the children in marriage, even if they're hostile children, should take into mind and not try to acquit the wife with a tiny amount of money equivalent to a certain weight of silver, but should try to carry out the will of Chachamina Zechrona Mudrocha and to provide her with at least the funds that she's entitled to, this is what she would get if she says, I'd rather get married, and I'm prepared to get married. She would only make that statement when she has one to get married to, and the plans are ripe and ready to be carried out. In that case, her support stops. As I said before, the apartment, the expenses, and the medical costs, and she could get a flat sum of money equivalent to the ksuvah. And say the ksuvah is divided into three basic funds. The support for 1 year, which if someone challenged that in the Bezdin, it might end up that she would be awarded only about $75 for the ksuvah, because the value of silver is not the same as, proportionally as it was in earlier generations. But that's not what the ksuba actually consists of, and even if someone says we're not prepared to give up more than that tiny amount of money, they should be advised very strongly by the rabbonim who handle the situation that the takanas chachamim, they could get away with it, was to provide, as I said before, a year's support plus the value of what the woman brings in. And I want to add something to that.
if someone was very poor and they had no nidunyan, they didn't bring in anything. Well, the halacha is that when we write the ksuba, we don't look at what they actually brought in, but we look at the standard amount that people brought into the marriage, because many hundreds of years ago, it was agreed that the standardized the value of the goods that were brought in by the newlywed wife from her family, the Dain, the Dunya, the Hanolosplain, and Behavuha, and we value it as Meazukuki Kesatsur, which is considerably more than Mosayim Ksuv, which is the basic amount of the Ksuv, it's 4 to 1 year. It should be understood that this is the Rotsayin of the Chachomim, although it could be contested because we write certain specific amounts of silver. And it's double because, as I said before, the voluntary addition that the husband agreed to when he wrote the silver. And he put Makabal Kinyan and his Mashavah himself to the silver. And then they acquitted themselves of any debt to her. She has the silver and she could go on with this newly married life and live with a new husband. Nevertheless, the children should still honor her, be sure to carry out their filial duty as kibbutz aim. When it's a father, then it's kibbutz ov, and when it's a mother, then it's kibbutz aim. So these are just basic rules, and there are others who have to be taken care of. If there's an unmarried girl, younger than the age of 12 and a half, where she's a boy here, and I'll explain what that is immediately, then she has to be supported. That's called mozeh habonos. And that takes preference over the yerusha to the sons. The daughters must be supported. Now, why is it that the settled 12 and a half? What kind of age is that 12 and a half? The reason is because in those times, the girl got married at 12 and a half. From the age of 12 till 12 and a half was the time when they went out looking for a shidduch for a daughter, and by 12 and a half, almost all daughters were married. That's where this period of time comes from. So in the Torah, there are two periods of maturity. For a girl, there's only one for a boy. And for the girl, there's Nairus and Bagrus. And I'm not going to go into these halachas now. This is not the forum for it. But again, as I said before, since there's more than just the minimal requirement of halacha, but there is the spirit of the halacha, and since today, 12 and a half is not the age for marriage, it should be understood that the mosag habonos should continue till the time when the girl is either married or reached the age where she's self-supported, agree that they no longer need the Yerusha for the parent to support them. That's what Mosan Habonis required. Again, if there's Tuasha and Mokitzva, if there are medical needs, they apply to the daughter as well. If there are other Chiyuvim to the wife, then there are to the daughters, but those are highly technical, and that's not for this discussion. say it. It's a pain in my leg sometimes. Now let's get back to the actual vision of Prabhupada. I said before that there is the Chalukas and the Rishut, which is in the Torah. And yet the Torah made provisions for one to change the Rishut and perhaps be a little more even-handed, to give something to the daughters, and to speak with every one of the children is happy, and perhaps there's a child who is totally self-sufficient and doesn't need much, but they still should never be left out. I'd like to point that out just parenthetically. That if there's a child who's rich and doesn't need anything from the parent, they take it as an unkindness if the parent omits them from the Yerusha and say to this child, I'm not giving you anything because they have enough of their own. It's sometimes very hurtful to do like that. Even the wealthy children should be given something, but it's quite acceptable and fair for a larger portion to be given to the children who are more needy. Now, how does one go about this? Well, the first method is what Chazal called a matna shumra. Matna shumra means when a parent is sick, and eventually that becomes his final sickness, and he dies from that sickness, then anything that he bequeathed during the sickness is automatically accepted just by word of mouth. We say matna shumra kesubim v'chatzurim domi. It's as if it were written into a document, and as if this document was given to the hands of the recipient and he received the funds legally through this document as a kinyan, as a transfer of funds at the time it was drawn up. But the Chachamim said to take this request and treat it in the same terms as if it were a Yerusha. What does that mean? That means that it's the parents' personal property while they're alive, and only after they die is it transmitted to the children. Matan Shumra means that it's considered to be a form of Yerusha, which means that it becomes the property of the recipients after their passing, not while they're alive in this world, as is any Yerusha. Although one might ask, how could this be? It doesn't belong to the parent after they pass on, it belongs to the children. How could they take property that belongs to others and divide it in a much different way? The answer is because this is what the Chachamim were misaking. They wanted the person in their final sickness to be able to distribute their Yerusha and not be disturbed and told that they have to do it in a certain way. Whatever they want has to be given over. Matnas Shimriyak Yasubim the Kansurim Domi. While the parent is sick, whatever is instructed about his property has to be carried out. Now, let's say that a person wants to distribute his property while he's still alive and healthy, which in most cases is the preferable way to do it. Because who knows if a person will have a chance when they reach this final illness to be able to distribute their property. It may be that there will be an accident and there will be a flashing moment from the time they're healthy to the time they're no longer here. And when would they make a will? When would they instruct anyone about their property? is another method. The other method is the person takes his property and gives it to a third party. And this is similar to what we call today a trust. He takes the money and puts it into the hands of someone who has no access to it personally, but can only follow the instructions of the parent. And this is mitzvah l'chayim divrei hames. It's a mitzvah, it's less binding, but it almost never could be avoided. When money is given into the hands of a third party, and it doesn't have to be transferred in physically, but it has to become a cognitive, something that he has the responsibility to distribute, and no one else can touch the funds but him when the time comes to distribute them. That's called mitzvah l'chayim divrei hames. It's a very important method. Sometimes the parent wants to revolver enough money to make himself comfortable, and he doesn't have to have access to any other of his property. And so he puts it into the hands of a third party and says, do with it as I instruct. In that case, after his passing, that person must follow the instructions of the parent. If, by hook or crook, a child went and was able to get hold of the property, which they're not supposed to do, but under certain circumstances, the others can get their share as dictated by the parent, because he no longer has access to the fund. But an intelligent person sets this up, he sees with the aid of the advisor, he sees how to put this third party in control. Now, this is similar to a trustee who is given the authority to distribute the funds, and it's not in the hands of the parent any longer. But in this case, as in the case of Mamash Kumail, the parent could decide to withdraw the trust that he made and recover the funds and use it and give it distributed in any different way than he planned originally. This is another possibility. Most people, though, don't want to do it in either of these two ways which I've discussed broadly in Shas. And they'd rather be able to give a matmas borei, means something that they bequeath and instruct to be done with their property while they're alive and healthy. And still, they should have a method of distributing what's theirs in the way that they prefer and they like, although without something special, without some method that's not mentioned in Shas, they really have no way of doing it. Because so far we mentioned three different ways of distributing assets. One is the Yerusha of the Torah. The third is mitzvah kaim divrei hames. Most people prefer the fourth way. And the fourth way is that while they're alive and healthy, they should be able to give instructions how to distribute their property. And without giving up any control of it, and without being sick, and still they should be able to instruct and have their instructions carried out. Now, there were methods that were devised in the time of the Yerushalayim, way, way back, many, many hundreds of years ago. The prime purpose of this new method was to create a way for the daughters to get a fair share of the Yerusha. And in those days, the daughters, the preferred idea was to give the girls one half of the share of the boys. The man had a number of children, girls and boys, so all the boys would get a full share. I'm omitting the discussion of the Bechor, but assume there was none, just to help us out with this discussion. And the girls should get a half share. So the Yerushalayim invented and devised a method to this, and they called this to create Shtar Chotzi Zohar, a document which gives the girls a half a share. In reality, today, nobody ever uses this document for a half share, but they use it for all kinds of ways of distributing funds, whether it's to give the girls an equal share, or sometimes more than the boys, or whatever it happens to be. But as I said early in the beginning, to try to keep away from this, and I have to call it by its name, a Yitzhahor, to keep revising and changing wills and hurting people and helping people, doing all kinds of strange things with the funds because they can't really enjoy it. They can't swallow the delicious food that they were able to, or even go to Florida and sit in the sun and old and decrepit without having any hanoah. Their single hanoah is to rearrange the Yerusha Kampush plan. The person who has seichel finds so many beautiful hanoahs. And besides the chesed that they give themselves, but the shared time, and not only the shared time, but the gift of their knowledge and of their life experience over to the children is such an important thing. Tell you one interesting line of Hazal. Gemara says that there's a person who was bitten by a scorpion, and he was bitten in a way that there's no way to cure it, but there was a way to prolong his life. But the method of the medical method in those ancient times, the medicine was different than today. And the Gemara tells us what to do, and it's a very difficult cure. Not a cure at all, but just a temporary lengthening of his life for a short time. And the Gemara said he got to go through the whole thing. Why? So that he could advise his children and give his last instructions. You see how important it is to the elderly person to share his life wisdom, which he spent so many years acquiring, with his children, who would love to hear just even a small phrase and word, and they would cherish it, keep it, and repeat it to their children and children's children. So there is quite a bit of hanor that could be experienced by people who think they have no hanor left. Sharing their life experience with their family and developing a relationship with their progeny, or with other people in case they're on them, or with other people in case their children are hostile to them for whatever reason. There is. And that sharing of experience is something that's so much more valuable than all these other contrived and bitter hanoas that people devise to themselves. That when the elderly person, like we said before, is dying, and there's only a way to keep them alive for a couple of hours, still involved, they go to all lengths to have him alive so that he could leap over some of these experiences. Realize how important it is, as I said. And this is advice not to the elderly alone, but it's advice to the children. Many people think they're so smart that they have nothing to learn from the previous generation, but there's very, very much to learn. As I'll tell us that Rabbi Yochanan and others stood up for elderly goyim. Our doctors stood up for them, they helped them, they assisted them, and they honored them. And the reason is because these people lived a long life and have what to tell over about their world experience, and it is something valuable in the life they live. So let's get back to the method used for distributing the funds, which is known as the Shtar Chotzi Zohar. Said again, I want to remind you that there's nothing particular about giving girls a half share, but at the time this Shtar was drawn up, many, many years ago, it was done specifically for this purpose. And how is it accomplished? It's accomplished by the owner of the property, the parent or whatever, writing a document which says that he admits under certain conditions to owing someone, and this someone could be a person who they have almost no relationship with. Owe a certain person a large sum of money which is equal to more than their entire yerushah. In a certain case, it could involve millions and millions of dollars. They admit to the fact that they owe them money under certain conditions. And once a person makes a withdrawal to that extent, they have to give up all their money. What is the condition that limits the debt that they have to pay to this unrelated person? They're not going to end up giving a penny to. They say that this, I wrote out a will, and I gave instructions as how to divide my property. I realized that these instructions are not binding, because I gave the girls a property, and I gave it to each son a different share. Thank you. I told you I'm not experienced. I've never done this before. So the person draws up their tzavot, and he gives his carefully prepared, not frivolously prepared instructions, but instructions that he put heart and soul into giving, which he attempts in every which way to be fair to the children and to give them what he feels is justly and generously theirs, and to try to avoid arguments and battles that so often destroy a family after the death of the head of the family. So many times have I been at Nichum Avelim, where on the way out I was asked, Joe Adelsky, maybe you could visit us next week. We all decided we'd like to meet with you. Perhaps there's a way that we could settle things between us. The battle is already drawn. The front lines are men, weapons, and soldiers. It's such a heartbreaking thing. I always admire families that filled with love and respect for each other and continue with the same Abba and covet that he was while the parent was alive. But the parent takes this carefully prepared sabot and says the following: I have this debt which I admitted to, but there's a condition attached to it. The condition is that the children decide that they're not going to honor the tzavot. But if the children agree to carry out my wishes, in that case, then the debt to the other person is canceled because it was conditional to begin with. But if they fail to come to an agreement, I'm going to contest my will, even though it's not binding or the halacha on them, but if they're going to contest it and fail to live up to my instruction, then the debt that I admitted to this stranger, which is equivalent to every penny that I looked over, that was mine, that debt is going to be in full force. The other person could come and collect the money. It could happen that there's one child who's so angry at being treated unfairly for what they perceived as unfairly. By the parent, if they're willing to lose every last penny, and the janitor is going to receive the millions of dollars, end up with all the money, just so that no one else in the family should get any more than that. I've seen people practically lose their senses and some lose their sanity because of jealousy. Jealousy is something that's the most horrible sickness there is. We spoke before about sickness. But the Pasuk says, your cat has some skin. If a person has skin, then his bones are rotten and he begins to deteriorate. Even though he's alive and healthy, he goes to the gym 3 times a week. But if he has that disease called the kapatomite, then he's as sick as anyone. Somehow, kina has to be cleansed from the mentality and the feelings of everyone. But this tarachos yizochor is something that is devised for this purpose, and there are various forms and mischoes drawn up which were used throughout the ages. There is a sefer. It was drawn up by one of the early scholars, whose authority is extremely great throughout the ages. He was the author of the Nachla Shiva. Nachla Shiva wrote the mischoes for most of the stories that we use today. When you have an employer, you want to give power of attorney to an individual to represent you. You give him a hashoah, which that hashoah is found in the Nachla Shiva. The ksuba that we have is found in the Nachla Shiva. And they get in many other documents. They're all found in the Nachla Shiva. In this sefer Nachla Shiva, there is a nusach for the Shtar Chatzi Zohar. The particular nusach that he has is a long one, which has many, many details. It's not a standard form of the transcript of the Shtar Chatzi Zohar, but it's filled with the history of the individual and his bequeathings and what he wants to do with every last penny. But it contains the essence of the Shtar Chatzi Zohar, and of course, every single person who makes it up could use that shtar and have the necessary changes. For those who want to go to the Nachla Shiva, I have a sefer here with me. It's in Perek Chaf Aleph, And the Nachla Shiva gives the beginning of every sermon. He worried of the shtar. And then he goes to pages and examines every single change and every lashon, explains it, explains how to make changes when necessary. Today, I have brought with me a copy of the Shtar Chatzi Zohar that came up in the Torah that came before us, where the Yerusha was contested. The children went and contested the Shtar Chatzi Zohar, and they took it to one bezin after another until it finally ended up in court. And for the most part, the Shtar Chatzi Zohar was ignored. We're indebted to Rabbi Feivel Cohen, who published a small sefer, the Kuntus Medor Lador, where he gave a couple of examples of Shtar Chatzi Zohar. One to be used by an elderly man, one by a woman, written in Hebrew and written in English. And these could be skeleton mischoes for anyone who wants to write a pet shtar. I advise that people should use that if they want to distribute their property in ways other than the 3 basic ways that I described to you. And they should do it with the advisement of a qualified girl who knows about these things,
kind of has experience can see to it that there's no loophole there which could lead to internal explosions of the family. Somehow to make provisions so that going to contest in Bezdin or anything else would perhaps void the some provisions that would sharp us his offer, and yes, have this stranger collect all the funds that belong to this person. And if you've done it in a legal way so that the children should have absolutely no access to the funds should they decide to ruin the intent of the bequeathing parent.
The standard will that people make,
and
their lawyers with their attorneys.
I'll talk about that in a moment. The standard will that people make is extremely helpful. Why? Because accompanied by the Shaykh's offer. Are the people actually doing that? Well, that's what we're here for tonight.
I've seen wills, and are
they fine? The wills that people write are binding al pi halacha, according to all authorities in the world, in other words, universally accepted by everyone. Only when it's accompanied by this Shtarchos Hizochor, which makes it binding upon the children so that they have no way of avoiding the Tzavot, unless they want to tell the rest of the family, Polis Napshi and Pushtik, and lose everything for everyone by fighting the will. By the way, this is automatically just tells any person with the slightest amount of sense in his head that if he left a single child out of his tzavua, that child is going to blow up the whole will by avoiding the shtarchos hizochor and fighting the will, so that no one should be left out of Yerusha. Moreover, no one should be given such an insignificant amount that they'll deem it to be such an insult to themselves that they'd rather get rid of it than have the shtarchos hizochor take precedence. Now, the shaila was brought up before Ga'oinei Olam. Should a will be honored if it's not accompanied by a Shtarchos Hizochor? Rav Moshe Zatzal held that under very limited circumstances we could require children to follow the Tzavua, which was written up while the person was healthy, which is a Matnas Bori, and yet it's not accompanied by a Shtarchos Hizochor. Rav Moshe, however, advised people to draw up the Shtarchos Hizochor Chachila, to do it without having to resort to Chedushim. His similar words from other Ga'onei Olam, including Chida Eger, but the overwhelming majority of the Chachmei Yisrael held that you can't really enforce a Tzavua that has no Shtarchos Hizochor to back it up. So what do? You go to court and have the government distribute the money according to the provisions of the will without having the Torah honor that distribution. In that case, the person may be chayev the gezel. And any of the children could look in the mirror and point to themselves and say, there stands a gezel. Those who contest the provisions of the Tzavot, or who try to fight it, may end up with money that's causal. But, I said before, the regular Tzavot, which is not accompanied by Shtarchos Hizochor, has very little to rely upon for validity in terms of halacha. So, people who are not capable of doing these things should go to a rabbi. After all, when one draws up a will, who does he approach? The lawyer. So yes, he follows the lawyer's advice. Why isn't he just a little bit smarter than that?
and follow the Rebbe's advice, which is generally more accurate and more intelligent. I'd like to say this without directly insulting lawyers, but those that I know and those that I work with when it comes to these subjects honor the halacha very, very gracefully. And it's people like that who give legal advice in combination with the advice coming from experts in halacha that together create something that will be effective legally, it will be effective in halacha, and that case, and the lawyer is both intelligent and wise, and the halacha is the thing that dictates the last judgment. I'd like to mention a very interesting minhag that many people have, and it became the fashion in recent times. I've seen it a number of times, where a person says, I'd like to divide up my Yerusha according to the Yerusha HaTorah. Give the Bechor Kishnayim, give the boys the rest of the Yerusha, make provisions for Mazayim Ha'isha, Rabbonis, and the Tzub and so on. And yet, at the same time, treat all the children, including the girls, fairly. You know what they do? They take a portion of their wealth, set it aside, let's say 10,000, 20,000, and they say this amount of money is to be divided up, alpi halacha, alpi hilchus yerusha shel hatorah, together, of course, with, as I said to you, the Gnoim and Chazal for taking care of the Isha bonus, and the remainder of the Yerusha, which is, of course, in most cases, much, much larger and more significant. They take it, divide it up among all the children, to see to it that everyone is happy and satisfied. And then they have to make a tzavua and a shtar chatzisocha. I think I'm going to stop over here, and it's time to honor your question, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
How can we make a will against the Tzara? That's why the Tzara there, we're making a sacrifice up to force the children to honor the will. But the will itself is not going in the Tzara there.
That's not so important. In the Pasuk it says, V'hoyu b'yoyim ha'nchiloi esponot. And Yechon Joyce learns that b'yoyim ha'nchiloi esponot means that a person could be manchil to his children whatever, in whatever manner he chooses, with certain limitations. But it could be more to one, less to the other. The matnashim mirah that Chazal were misakim is definitely not for dividing up the property according to the Mishnah HaTorah, otherwise there wouldn't be matnashim mirah. But it was for majority of people who had l'chol hapachus a period of time when they were in their final illness, the person could have easily drawn up a matan shemirah, and for a moment before their death, even if they suffered from a severe accident, he could have said, I am dividing up all my property according to the terms of the will that I drew up 30, 40 years ago, whatever it was, or recently, because of course things have to be changed with the changing of the times and circumstances of the families. So that a matan shemirah could be given 95% of the time, even if the person is in such a short period of sickness that they don't have time to draw up the tzavua, but they could. They could, give strength and permanence to the tzavua that they already drew up to give it legality. Chazal also gave us the mitzvah of Chaim Dever HaMes method. So we see that it's not as if Chazal told us you must follow the Mishnah HaTorah precisely, that we went ahead and outsmarted the Torah by making up this device. The reason for it was to ensure that people who were in Shemirah accidental death, or they had a, they were in a coma. Many people just don't, you know, get serious about distributing their money, their property, until it's no longer possible for them to do. And that's why amendments were done to accomplish the same things that Matan Shemeh and the Sultan did have met. And the Bahoya beyond Hakilo Yasbono, according to the Yasbono. So it's not as if Chazal ruled out any changes and said, you gotta do it this way and no other way. Make sure that the girls don't get anything. And there was one time when a fellow who was, there were three girls and there was two boys or one boy. No, there was people in their 50s and 60s already, and they were left with this big Yerusha, and the will was made in order to give everyone in the family their share. And this boy decided the older vote to him, and he wants to be in kind of like it says in the Torah. So there's nothing that I could do to persuade him. I told him that it was the meaning of the part of the Yerushalayim to see who had the girls got a half share. I wanted to do like the Yerushalayim, I think it's smarter than him. No, he doesn't care what I say. But then it came to time to sign the papers, the death certificate, or whatever it was that the papers required, and they required the signature of all the children. So I told the children to tell this brother that we'll give you our signature, but there's a price attached to it. And unless you pay us, whatever it is, so we're not going to sign. And you fight and try to probate the will, and you'll have all the trouble in the world. By the time it will be over, there'll be nothing left. So, we're charging money for our signature. And he screamed and carried on and called me up and said, you've done it, and you advised my family what to do. I said, thank you very much for the honor. I said, go give them something that's fair and equitable and be nice about it. Then you'll get a nice share. Make sure you get larger than anyone else. But that's the way it has to be done. So he swallowed the words and did as I advised him. I don't know if he ever came over the shock, but it's a number of years I haven't heard from him. But Shoachas Koydim Lamisosoi is the not always possible to give a Makonet a Shoachas Koydim Lamisosoi, because if he's not really Shoachas Koydim Lamisosoi, then it's Makonet Makon. He has to be a Bagash. He's taking a big chance on giving something Shoachas Koydim Lamisosoi. Yeah, but that's already, you know, we run into barriers when you can't pinpoint the time that should be held. And, you know, it's really angrier by giving that money. So, it's not so partial to all. That's why the Tadmoyman preferred the Sharkovsky's offer. Yeah.
No, whatever you want.
Oh, you should specify what he wants to give out.
Let's say he wants to have some child more than the other to be able to make that, or you're not going to make such a child.
Of course he could.
There
are two stories involved. There's a Shtar Tzavor where he instructs how to give the line of his money. And the children don't have to follow that Shtar, because it's a Matnas Bori that was given in a way which can't be enforced. But there's a Shtar Chotzis also to make it so that the children have no choice but to follow the Tzavor, other than destroying the entire Yerusha, anger and killing. Now,
think if you saw a template of the star, you'd understand a little bit better.
I'll tell you, I have three things with me. I thought I was told by Reuben Becker, perhaps I should come here with a bunch of Sarfas and Zofras to distribute. But I thought to myself, the one I have here, the one I have, which is used by this employer, contains a lot of private information. The one that was is coming from the Rachoshev was a number of pages, and it wouldn't be too helpful to people who are not familiar with these Adwanim, and it wouldn't give you a good enough picture. The one drawn up by Pavel Cohen is very apropos for today's times, and it fits in with the style of writing that we're so familiar with, and everyone would be able to use it. But then again, there's a copyright on the safer, and I have no interest to copy it to distribute it to people.
Call me Dora the Daughter.
Call me Dora the Daughter, and go to Sorenson and buy it. The rights belong to the owner of the safer, not to me. But I can't make copies of it. I can just tell you where to buy it.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
There are many families which and after the defeat of the parents,
this will be our last question in consideration for our next
meeting. I'll comment on this wonderful suggestion. I have to say, Rabbi Isaac, that there was twice in my family when we divided up the Yerusha. It's from my father, Zechel Brocha, and from my mother, who was Leah Sholem. My wife was the father 9 years before. And it was money that had to be divided up. So it was our wonderful experience that everyone in the family said, you take it, you need it more than I do. So it was a long time before the money was actually distributed because everyone felt that there's someone else who needs it more than I. Is this advisable? Of course, it's the most advisable thing in the world. Yeah, I want to tell you, Moshe. The many people that you know so well are still fighting over the Yerusha. They're good people and they're wonderful people. But it's not a double portion. You know, a few bucks, let me use a word that sounds more real in the
vernacular.
Take a family and rip it apart. And they all agree over this and they all agree over that. If I gave you any mashalim, then you'd know too much. What you hope for and what you brought the family to pay for very often is questioned. Why is it like this? Why is it like that? And what should be with the business? And why should this child be not have to buy it off from all the others by paying so much money that it's impossible for them to buy it out to the end of his family business? It just to told you the truth. It's so difficult when it comes to the Yerusha. It's wonderful that everybody should be so at peace with each other and care so little about the Yerusha. that they should just go ahead and say, take what's yours, take what's mine. There's after some poor knowledge. Those kind of shit, who cares? And even with this $10,000, he doesn't say, look, here's Chaim Yankel, he needs all that money. He's having so many problems. I don't have problems with Hashem. And so, a wonderful family that does like this, Ashrei Chelko, let it be by every year. But so often, we have to just do a little bit extra to reassure that people don't let their kin and the yetzahoras and the machloikas and their real kindness to get the better of them. And fight, and take a family that was so together for so many years and let it deteriorate and be destroyed and they never talk with each other. Do something to assure that enchanami, the goodwill that exists in the family, should continue by making it so that there is no Yerusha to fight about, that it's all mesudr, and it's mesudr in a way that their dear, beloved parents wanted, and they don't look down on their parents. The family that looks up to their parents honors what their parents wanted. The family that fought and ignored their parents, like all those elderly people in the nursing homes that I visited. It's so horrible to see it, how they're ignored and forgotten about. I'm sure their instructions won't be followed so pleasantly by the family member, even if there's an easy way. So you gotta be careful and you gotta make sure that the disaster is not gonna happen.